While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now we come back, dear listeners, and welcoming you specifically to this session here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM, and this is the On The Radar, as you just heard right there. And primarily just to share with you the particular, well, it's the end of the week, eh? And it's specifically a good, I almost said Good Friday, but that would have put us in another particular religious scenario. But ultimately, since you're here on your drive time session, wherever you might be traveling, safe travels, specifically adhere to the road signs and to the necessary legislation affiliated to traveling and all that. But we obviously still have a particular interesting discussion lined up here for you here on your number one talk radio station. Now, stepping into our menu immediately, dear listeners, as a chunk of time was obviously sort of like appropriated without just compensation from the Sizuma's team, primarily having their conversation right there. We start off immediately with our particular subject matter here on today's On The Radar. Now, for today's session on the Radar, we engage on what has been the developments for various particular sectors throughout the course of this particular 2 week session here on the Radar that we've been together. Some of these have been sectors that have seen significant changes being applied to them, and others are still in the process of their particular adjustments. Now, on one such particular key sector that has been singled out for its ability to provide significant change to the Namibian economy has been the arts, culture, and entertainment sectors. Now, mind you, the sports sector can be considered as being part of the entertainment sector or being part of entertainment, but it has been explored in our Wednesday edition of the On The Radar, and with its particular developments on the horizon for 2026 and developments that have taken place for the past year. I'm joined today by my partner in crime on the home run, that being Helmut, and which on the home run specifically, which is the daily show where we've had the opportunity of expanding on the various local, regional, international developments for this particular look at the major developments concentrated in the arts, culture, and entertainment segment. For more, let's have a listen to this conversation. So on this particular Friday session, dear listeners, and as we draw close to the holiday period specifically, we once again take a look at the interesting conversations of what were some of the major talking points happening throughout the course of this year of 2025, obviously looking back on this On The Radar edition. And one of my specific, if I can call them sort of like my favorite subject matter to talk about, because I've also been a consumer of the sectors a lot, is the arts, culture, entertainment, and heritage sector. But joined here for this discussion here on the Radar, I'm joined by Home Runs Helmut. Obviously, he's also my partner in crime, as we both obviously for the course of this year have dissected many particular topics on the Home Run as well. Helmut, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for the conversation for today.
Good morning.
So I know it's a little bit earlier, Helmut, before the
way too early for me. 4:30 is very far from me.
You know, for serious in-depth discussion.
Yeah.
But we're obviously here on the Radar and just, you know, highlighting some of the particular interesting, as well as also developments obviously that have happened during the course of the year. Was we obviously saw with much anticipation potentially what would the cabinet look like under the administration of President Nandi Ndaitwah.
Yeah.
The biggest obvious surprise for many of us was the super ministry that was, you know, mashed together.
MESAC.
I don't want to make the other joke associated potentially to that, but when MESAC came about and we had to unbundle every particular
if I can call it, abbreviated letter in that whole acronym of the ministry.
Yeah, hence the shortening is really long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sit with a image of, okay, this is good. Everything is partnered up under one particular ministerial or governmental authority. But then when you look at every particular element or every particular sector within that label of that ministry, you realize potentially how big the responsibility becomes of that ministry. And this ties into our conversation of entertainment, arts, and the culture scenes that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Specifically, when you saw that ministry being formed, Helmut, what messaging did you get from that announcement?
Two things. The first one is the obvious one, which is, my God, this is huge.
Mm.
But then it sort of like, makes, you know, eases one's in, one when you begin to realize that, this is a massive ministry with obviously a lot of responsibilities.
Mm.
Yeah. Then you look at, they are split in different, into different, directorates.
Mm.
Yeah. Then when you begin to think of it in a way of, this is like having kids, right? Because at some point, people will start saying, okay, which one of them is your favorite?
Or you start.
Yeah, which one of them are you going to prioritize?
If you have to call one of them, you go like, hey, Dennis, Tom.
No, I mean,
man, what is your name? You know, you keep guessing at which name specifically you actually want to get it.
Yeah.
And that's the question. But yeah, you were still saying about the favorite kids.
Then you start going, okay, which one of them is going to be the favorite kid in terms of prioritizing.
Mm.
Obviously one thing that is a headache, like not just for Namibia and SOEs and ministries, but this just the world over, this doesn't seem to be like enough money to go around, more like to fund every project in all ministries. So at the end of the day, you will have to prioritize that. At least for me, raises up a lot of questions of, oh, okay, my God, MESAC, that's a very long one, that's a lot of directorates. I wonder which one is going to take priority in terms of financing, because that's where financing, obviously, for directorates or ministries or whatever you may call it, is going to push one directorate's initiative, obviously, more than other directorates' initiatives if they are not given enough funding.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, on that particular question, obviously, it was our tongue-in-cheek joke specifically on the home run, but it was a particular joke that actually had so much reality in it. Remember the National Arts Fund?
The
act itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that Section 19?
Yeah, it was Section
19. Just came and curtailed everything.
That just drop kicks everything out of the water.
Yeah.
And obviously,
and they're still working on that one.
They are still, because
on the amendments, yeah.
Because one of the reasons, obviously, since it's an act and the particular amendments associated to it,
What
we spoke about last year was about the public contributions, the stakeholder engagement. And in this year, we were hoping that, this potentially might be rounded out, because we potentially saw a lot more, I don't want to say motivational actions, meaning you could see positive movements happening about, but all of them predominantly still materialized in public engagement, public talks, and panel discussions happening, and once again, with the last one obviously being the musician that we cited, the guy that said from another panel discussion that happened in the middle of the year, was that at a stage, everyone thought they could be musicians because there was actual financing put available.
Yeah.
Obviously, when we look into NDP6, NDP6 speaks about job creation, and NDP6 speaks about revenue contribution to,
economy.
Yeah, to the overall economy, or let's just call it productivity contribution. Helmut, firstly, if we break up those two particular desired goals that NDP6 speaks of, and you look at where we were still in 2025 for this year, it seemed like we are once again stuck in a particular rut of, so far we're just doing public engagements, stakeholder engagements, panel discussion sessions, and we don't see any real developments moving. The real developments, obviously, is you've got to see the sector actually having its events, sourcing talent from the local communities across the country.
Yeah.
And thus you start seeing, you know, the desired goals materialize. So far, the discussion still has been slow. What did you also see specifically? Because you're someone that comes from the stand-up comedy realm in the entertainment sector.
Yeah.
What have you guys also seen in that realm?
In terms of use the word formalization, because we are I feel like we're in the, especially the entertainment sector.
Mm.
We're still in that process of formalizing, as in fully incorporating the creative sector in a way of in a way that they monetize enough for them to contribute, or for us to contribute.
100%. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, for us to contribute to the overall economy.
Mm-hmm.
2023, working with Freemind, I had a privilege of meeting one gentleman from Ghana. He came from Ghana. He does host events, he does MC a lot of events.
Mm.
Yeah. And one of the question we asked is that, you as a comedian, take for example, if you are doing a gig, whether it's a large event or just at a club somewhere, what paperwork do you have to sort of like fill in, and what type of revenue that you have to contribute based on that gig that you just performed, in terms of, regular, government revenue collection or something.
Mm.
I was like, we're not very big at that, at least not at the moment.
Yeah.
Because you'll just find maybe an upcoming singer or an upcoming comedian at a club just performing. After that performance is given $500, $1,000, you just put in your pocket and go.
Mm.
Now, the guy, because it was a husband and wife,
mm.
the guy didn't seem to sort of like get what I was sort of explained, because he was engaged in a different conversation. The wife asked that question. After I explained that, that's when he was going. You could see the O in her face. It was like, really? You guys do that, like, yeah.
But was it a scenario of she was surprised?
She was surprised.
Or she was surprised in terms of, how potentially the lack of development in the sector.
That's actually what she was surprised at, in a way that, because that's, the scenario I just explained have to do with, and this is something that is also known by a lot, if not all, everyone in the creative sector.
Mm.
There's a lot of fragmentation.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, you will obviously have to, I think this, that's what NDP6, will have to basically do, to find a way to bring, all the creatives together,
mm.
in a way that, they don't work in the, in the words of the Office of the Auditor General's report, in silos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, if you can figure out a way to bring all these creatives together in the way like you can see with NASCOM, for example,
mm.
then it will be very easy to not just to formalize, but also to pass instruction or any type of assistance, because right now the fragmentation is insane.
Mm. Just citing on the fragmentation discussion, I mean, Helmut, when it comes to the creative sector, and people, they follow their tastes in terms of what they consume.
You know,
some people love reading certain particular novels. Others like reading, real life events, like.
Yeah, some people like to watch, Jeffrey Dahmer, judging.
Yeah, that TV show. I know which gender it is, Hamoud. It's not our gender, definitely.
Oh, I know that.
It's not our gender.
Just didn't want to point it out.
But when we look at the fragmentation issue, because getting into the conversation specifically of what I've seen, it's a creative group,
mm-hmm.
and what they do every week, Helmut, they do like, it's almost, think about a podcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
But these guys are literally doing like reenactment, voice acting, but they sit around a table.
Yeah.
And their channel is known as the Critical. What is it? The Critical. I almost said something else. I almost identified someone else. But it's Critical something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're responsible for one successful adaptation of one of their previous works into a fully fledged Netflix animation series. and they've brought out their second one. The fragmentation is obviously seeing how people can try and bridge certain things. For example, like what many of the comedians that have been approached by a Netflix type for comedy particular
they based say productions. Netflix special.
Yeah, the Netflix specials that, what's his name, Dave Chappelle, the man.
Yeah.
Now, in many cases, the entertainment and creative sector depend on a mass medium, a communication medium.
Yeah.
Are we still ways off in terms of leveraging this particular potential? Because even though NDP6 does not mention it, it doesn't mean NDP6 has to identify a lot of things that actually, like saying, you must, you know, like the Bible in the Ten Commandments, you must do this, you must do that, you must do this. But we obviously don't see these particular, like, straightforward pinpoint scenarios, because it's up to us how we, as Namibians, bridge these particular gaps. Citing that particular scenario, Helmut, because we only have two TV stations, but we've got a whole bunch of radio stations.
Yeah.
Then there's obviously also the discussion in terms of monetization of content.
Yeah.
And that has obviously been the biggest issue. What can you share specifically on the monetization of a scenario? Because we've got a lot of intellectual property associated to this.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work and a lot of people to convince, versus if you go to other places in the world, it's pretty straightforward. People can just monetize what they think about, what they put it on paper, and they present it.
I think the one that you know, a very interesting, you know, let me just say, topic of interest for the creative sector right now is the monetization discussion. Now, this I think I learned last month that the ministry, you know, the government, especially the Ministry of ICT, is well aware of the monetization and how those that are in the creative sector actually wants to see that implemented in Namibia, for example. That's why last month, during the, you know, while addressing a group of influencers, the Minister of ICT, Emma Teofilis, pointed out, you know, she gave, you know, a speech of about, I think, about 12, 15 minutes. Yeah, you know, she also emphasized that even though the discussion overall, she was talking to influencers about, was on the ethical use of social media. But she knew that you can't talk to influencers without bringing that in monetization part, because it's either you bring it up or it's going to be part of the questions during question and answer session. She did make a few points to that, that they have approached a lot of different platforms, like you know especially your Instagram, but one thing they keep getting from you know, from most platforms that they approach with regards to the monetization in Namibia for, you know, for influencers, is they say they like referencing just how small our population is.
And there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, people go haywire with Vision 2030.
I really don't want to comment on that one.
but that's the thing. Unless we import a whole bunch of people.
But interesting enough is, if you look up, you know, if you look up that whole discussion, because it's still on the MICT web, you know, Facebook page, you'll find that there's something that she does, the minister of now does mention towards the end of a speech, that that indicates that they are making headways, to the point that you know, those type of headways, before they are formally announced, they were somehow leaked from the ministry. So she I don't know how that happened, but she sort of like addressed that like, you know what, there's something that got leaked, but please guys, just wait for the formal announcement with regards to the headways that we are doing, especially in line with the monetization discussion. Now, the monetization is such an important topic, especially in the creative space, because of the digital age we live in. Those days, take for example, if you were an entertainer, you didn't have a lot of options to share your talent or to showcase your talent to your audience, because you needed a physical stage.
And
for
a newspaper.
You need a newspaper, maybe,
to promote,
you know,
on radio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But these days, all you just need is your smartphone, which everyone has these days, and then turn on your camera. You can just share that on these online platforms. Now, these online platforms, there are a lot of Namibians on, you know, all across the platforms that have a lot of reach, to the point where they have, you know, they would have, you know, they have reached the numbers that's in terms of followers and subscribers, maybe, that's required from a lot of platforms for them them to be monetized. But because these platforms don't actually have, they have not given countries like Namibia, monetization green light yet.
Mm.
You have a lot of Namibian, social media, or especially social media influencers that have all the numbers and all the content and stuff, but it's just the monetization green light that's missing.
Yeah.
Now, that whole population discussion is one that is,
it's never going to change.
Yeah, that's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you couple up, Helmut, the actual internet coverage in Namibia, because there's also a side development happening in terms of bringing Starlink to Namibia.
Yeah.
But if you follow, you can literally follow the national road network of Namibia and you'll find the limited access of internet.
Yeah.
Along that network. You won't find huge coverage areas, for example, in the whole of Kunene.
Oh.
Or in the Namib Desert. Suddenly there's just, this miraculous internet tower just sitting there, just giving you a universal Wi-Fi hotspot in the desert. There is no such thing.
Just ordinary network. As soon as you 50, 60 kilometers away from any urban area, one thing that you're going to run into is not only just a lack of internet connection, but just a, network for your phone calls or SMSs. Exactly. That's a serious struggle on its own, yeah.
Exactly. And those are some of the particular, and those are fundamental discussions to that monetization thing. Because the reason why I also brought up the monetization thing has been that YouTube, TikTok, obviously Instagram, they are the particular sort of like very easy social media platforms to share content with.
Yeah.
And, for the younger Namibians that are participating in that, obviously it helps them sort of like get in touch with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But here's a funny thing, Helmut. Monetization exists if you have a very popular website, then Google Sense does kick in. Google AdSense.
Yeah.
It does kick in. And, there are very few websites, and I think in Namibia, that have got healthy traffic. But then, once again, you ask the question of how many Namibians actually access
that website,
the website or the internet itself, or how many Namibians actually do have access to data. Another particular thing has also been the physical infrastructure of the entertainment sector, like enough bars, enough platforms where the physical stages are.
Yeah.
Or even.
Get extra big savings for an extra special Christmas at WB. Like 2 liter Oros, now only $37.99. 750 gram Crossen Blackwell Mayo for $37.99. 10 kg Buck Pro Fat Cook Flour for $139.99. And 2 kg Surf Hand Wash Powder for only $48.99. See all our December specials online at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Platforms where the physical stages are.
Yeah.
Or even, for example, being able to have like drama schools and performances like that. Those things are still pretty small. I'll share my particular, so far as a consumer, my particular exposure so far has been that I've seen very few Helmut promotional activity of the productions. To be honest with you, I've seen very few.
Yeah, they're very few.
If it's not being your own particular, the aspects that you promote on your social media status, outside of that, I see very few of it. What does that look like to you specifically in terms of how the marketing is letting down the entertainment, arts, and culture sector?
Ignore
sport, because sports know how sport, they promote themselves.
When it comes to sport.
Everyone is there. Everyone is there.
I don't even know anything about sports. when it comes to, providing like a space for creatives to showcase their talent, I haven't explored that space, I think, ever since 2021, when I formally, started, when I formally started doing comedy, with a crowd.
Mm.
Yeah. One thing I noticed is that this year I decided to, you know what, let me explore the physical stage. You know, let me just step out of my comfort zone, which is the studio is my safe space. So, like, just sit there and worry about.
No, it protects a lot.
You know, just they're making fun of people with more money and power than me. But one thing I've observed this year is that when it comes to providing the physical space for performers to showcase their talent, the outside the private sector is private institutions, and these are your clubs, these are your bars, these are your restaurants. They have provided, at least for me and very few friends of mine that I know. And then now, of course, I'm speaking about mostly, you know, the space that I'm familiar with, and that's Windhoek. I don't know how well it's done in other rural, in other urban areas across the country. One thing I know is that there's one guy that who is also a comedian, but he's a teacher by profession. I don't know how he pulls that off, but yeah,
staying sane by day.
I know,
and
insane by night,
and binging at night,
vampire style. Yeah. But look, he performed for one. For one very big event in the north. Yeah, he was just called from. Yeah, he had to drive from here to the north. That's where he had the event.
Yeah,
and there were a few events that I actually I was supposed to attend in Rundu, but I also just missed those ones. So they had a lot of activities going on there. Now here in Windhoek, I know 3 establishments that actually do offer space. For and they're all private that do offer space. One is a bar restaurant. Actually, they are both bar restaurant scenario. These two that I know, and they have one friend of mine basically have performed on all 3. They just offer this space, but then they just offer the space for you to go and showcase your art and more often, we are offering you a space. We can, you'll be on our platform. That also helps with promotion, but there's not much of compensation involved. But there's one where you can just have to show up, like 2-3 of you, and then you can just battle for $1,000. Yeah, the one that comes out on top, and they host that every Wednesday.
Yeah.
So that means every Wednesday now, as a comedian, I can just I just go on their social media. I just go on their Facebook page. They use Instagram for the most part. I just go on their Instagram, but submit my details, and then Wednesday I'm there to perform. If I win, I get $1,000. Yeah. So there are a lot of especially eating establishment that from my observation that are providing this space for creatives or entertainers like myself to go and showcase my talent. So that when the public private forum discussion came up, that rang a lot of bells, to me. Like, okay, NDP6 prioritizes the youth and also seeks to push the entertainment sector to monetization level where they can contribute meaningfully, where they can become one of the main players with regards to contributing to the economy, to the overall economy, like we see in a lot of other countries. So that's the public sector. And now when you bring in the National Arts Council Fund, that act is undergoing, revision because of Section 19. That's the private sector for me playing its role of making sure that the legislations are well sound for the private sector, both organizations and individuals to basically have a fighting chance or fair competing ground with regards to showcasing their talent.
Yeah.
So, and then you have these few private spaces here in Windhoek, at least that I'm familiar with, that are providing space to these creatives. So you have the public sector playing its role, if you ask me, with regards to making sure that they, the legislations are fine, they are laid down, or articulated well enough for the creative sector to thrive. And the Ministry of ICT also, is busy working up, you know, is busy working on speaking to these different platforms with regards to the monetization. And then that every time, you know, when I look at that, I now begin to, you know, to just literally sometimes look at myself in the mirror and go like, okay, the ministry is doing this. Overall, the government is doing this. The private sector is doing this. Now, the question then comes to me as a, you know, to me as a performer. How good is my work in terms of, competing and in terms of, pulling the crowd or in terms of quality?
Yeah.
Now, not just on a national level, but on a regional block level, like Africa and overall on a global stage. Because there's a lot of competition out there. Yeah.
Now, the obvious competition has always been the sort of like bigger markets when it comes to content generation. And that was one of the interesting things specifically when the minister spoke to those influencers.
Yeah.
Now, Helmut, I'll be straightforward. I don't follow any in Namibian influencers because what must I be influenced on specifically?
I know.
I have my own personal tastes. There's also a situation in terms of when you've got to look at influencers. Is it based upon a subject matter that you'll be interested in? Now, that's not our question that I'm actually
the subject matter
guiding into.
Yeah.
Because the interesting thing has been, how do we also look at the, it's not a weird thing to be, just per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scenario specifically of looking at, we saw some announcements, you know, based upon not just the NDP6, but also based upon, you know, things happening. Specifically like I cited the National Arts guys, the council itself, trying to stimulate conversations and likes. You had NAS that went and introduced a digital arts department.
Yeah.
Which technically speaks to sort of like a digital art design. And you've obviously have the overall national agenda now of trying to spur up the sectors. But the conversation has always been about, how do we solidify a base? Because you see the government is doing one side of things.
Yeah.
But then what is happening on the other side of things, specifically in the private sector realm of things, which now incorporates the likes of you and the various other particular sort of like colleagues in this, in the entertainment space that you work with. What is being done there? Do restaurant owners, bar, I'm not talking about, you know, Evelyn Street guys. Where you have to go make jokes there and then potentially someone takes offense there and they decide to do their own thing.
Yeah.
Or you sort of like your performance gets drowned out because the bar next door has got louder music than the bar that you are doing stand-up comedy in. It's more a scenario of, is there a real appetite for the kinds of products that we wish to introduce into the arts and culture and entertainment scene? Specifically, I'm asking that question in terms of, is there appetite for what we want to bring in? Or is it a question of literally you have to sell very hard what you want to bring in?
I would say it's a little bit of both. Because when you obviously once you bring up something, you'll have to sell it. But it takes us back to, just like any business or any product that you want to bring to the market, you first have to find out that you don't end up with a broccoli situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want to look at,
just go grow and then people say, nah.
That's something that I have to admit. Now that's something that took me a while to actually realize because, when you are, say, take for example, when you are called to perform at a school, for example, you don't just, storm there with the jokes that you would perform at church or at a club. Because
Okay. Firstly, you know, there are certain PG-related jokes.
Exactly.
That you can't.
That's exactly the point. There are certain things that, I remember having a gig at one religious gathering. Now, the thing is actually that's the easiest I can do. I was born and raised around pastors and, not going to church was punishable by missing a meal. And, so So I can create all kinds of content around.
I don't know why they like. Know why they like going for that
Africa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can create a whole lot of content around you know that fits a religious setting type of entertainment scenario, and a school is actually one easy one because we all went to school.
Yeah.
Clubs on the other hand. Clubs, I'm still in that transition because for one, I don't want to, you know, personally, I don't want to make it a frequency of performing there because first of all, I will have to, first of all, draw my language in a way that, it doesn't become a custom to the point where I start bringing that language on, you know, in studio.
Yeah.
And now for me, on the other hand, one thing I've also come to realize is that, the studio has its own content and the stage, as in, in a bar or a club or just like we did with Kagame's Festival or the National Literary Festival, it has its own, its own content. You first have to read the audience, before you decide, even if you decide to become a content creator.
Mm.
The first question you ask yourself is, who are my target audience?
Mm.
Yeah. Now, for me that likes politics, for example, current affairs. Yeah, thank you. One thing that I've come to learn is that a large number of my audience are over 30.
Mm.
Yeah.
And they can quickly snap into the joke.
Yeah, they can they get it just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for the young, for the much younger audience, let me just say 30 and below, if those are the people that I'm performing for, mostly the, the majority that you find in a lot of bars and clubs, a lot of them can't follow that train of thought.
Mm.
Now, for those ones, you have to go somewhat social.
Mm.
Yeah.
But in the social setting, it also potentially sets you into certain pitfalls.
Yeah.
Because the question is obviously, is this a joke that everyone is comfortable with?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
Yeah. Now, then that, in terms of, that brings us to the whole, monetization discussion that was pointed out during the influencer signed out by the Minister of ICT.
Mm.
And that's, the answer they keep getting every time they approach these platforms about the monetization discussion that your population is too small.
Mm.
Now, you are looking at a population of about 3 million and you have to subtract a lot of people, those ones that are too young to understand what
which
you're talking
about. Which is about 700,000.
Then you are going to be in those numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and how many of, now, what's, then that brings you to what is your medium of communication? What are you dispensing this content through?
Mm.
And then that brings us to the electrification, internet connection. By the end of the day,
education levels,
oh dear Lord,
access to money, those that have disposable money, those that have transport even.
Yeah, they're actually, when you come across a 30 seconds, 1 minute video on social media, for example, it's very easy to look at it and go like, that's easy to make, but those are the things you basically have to consider.
Mm.
Yeah,
and
like there are a lot of things to consider before deciding, like who are my target audience, because you don't want to be the one who's just jumping in between genres. Like take for example, if you're a musician, you don't want to be the one that's you are into rap one day and then gospel and then you are doing reggae
and then tomorrow you are an orchestra band or a percussion band for that matter, performing school songs. But
finger painting.
But yeah, you are actually right. Just on the last particular point, Helmut, before we sign out on our discussion, the biggest concern obviously is something that we have to look at the arts, culture, and entertainment sector. Sport knows what it has to do.
Yeah.
Sport knows that it has fans, that they are active athletes that participate in each of these sports codes.
Yeah.
But when you come to the arts, culture, and entertainment scene, the question is, do we have audiences? Now, I just want you to, give us a short summary on that scenario. Do we have the audiences? Can we actually break through that particular, if we can call it like a wall, an imaginary wall that limits us?
Yeah.
Can we break through it? And now this is the wall of monetization on the internet and on breaking the walls through in terms of like a real life scenario. I know I'm asking you to be a weatherman, but you know, just,
yeah.
just take that leap of faith.
Yeah, focused. I know. Look, when it comes to, okay, there are two ways that content creators, two main ways content creators make money.
Mm.
It's either through endorsements or they have monetization in their region.
Mm.
Yeah. So these two main, modes of monetization for content creators. One you can say is easily achievable in Namibia, and that's through, the endorsement examples.
Mm.
But obviously this will depend on this is mostly where I think the private sector now I would say they are willing to hop in and do that.
Mm.
Yeah, all you just have to do is give them a reason why they should do that.
Yeah.
And and obviously they are not good, they are not doing a leap of faith on this one. They are looking at a lot of things.
Mm.
Take for example, if I create now for now if I become a content creator, that's mostly into that's mostly into geopolitics, economics, and all that. It will be somewhat not very easy for someone to come and, to come and market juice boxes with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you create a content, for example, for, that appeals to large younger audiences, and we're talking about your teenagers and the kids and all that, and especially, mothers and all that, then it's very easy for someone to, to advertise, for example, ice cream and juice boxes with me, because they know that, they will be reaching an audience that will actually be interested in that product.
Mm.
Now, imagine in the middle of a geopolitical discussion, and then juice boxes comes up. 90% of the people that are watching that content are going,
"What is this guy
doing? What is this guy doing?" Yeah. So I think mostly when endorsement comes, for the most part, they are looking at what audience is the audience that you have cultivated.
Mm.
Are they? Are they the type of audience that will be interested in the product that they're willing to sell?
Mm.
Yeah. And one thing I have also observed is that that fragmentation discussion.
Mm.
There was a discussion that was there was a entertainer type of, a group of entertainers, basically those ones. I don't want to, now this is a part part of the problem, at least I've come to learn about the entertainment sector, is that we still need to gather more information
mm.
about where we are as a sector
mm.
and where we are headed, because the information is also just as fragmented.
Mm.
At some point, I think somewhere around July there, we came together at the side of Bros Market, this place behind they called etc.,
mm.
where entertainers were basically brought together, and this just also me talking about Windhoek because it's a place that I'm more familiar with.
Mm.
And one of the things, that was discussed was that, again, let's do more collaborating.
Mm.
Because, we are not only, fragmented in a way that, we don't know much about each other, but, we also don't sort of like, find each other to try, find ways that we can complement each other to achieve and, our respective goals.
Mm.
It's about a mutual, goal that you're chasing at the point. So, you have a fragmentation in terms of communication, you have fragmentation in terms of creation of, creation of this content. And now the numbers
mm.
for endorsements, very easy, because you are talking, if you create content that can appeal to a global audience,
mm.
you can amass those numbers.
Yeah.
But, when it comes to monetization, that one is more, there's a lot of bureaucracy involved in that.
Yeah.
So that one is, I think it's somewhat a little tricky to achieve, speaking from a performance standpoint.
Mm.
Of course, I'm sure the government may have a lot of different ways to sort of like answer that question.
Yeah. And on that particular note, Helmut, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners. Obviously, they'll hear you later on. At 4:30.
Definitely. All right, thank you.
100%.
Now, on that particular scenario, dear listeners, the extensive discussion right there obviously gives us that particular platform to look at, okay, so we've seen certain things come about. We've seen certain conversations being had. We've seen certain particular scenarios be, popping up across the country in terms of trying to get the creative sector, the arts and culture sector, as well as also the entertainment sector, moving along. It's not to say that it's been standing still. It's not to say that there hasn't been any developments. but it has been slow and it has been few and far in between. Remember, you also have to divorce the sports sector away, in its own right as an entertainment, component of the overall entertainment sector, away from the rest of the particular components that, also have to play their part in, stepping up and thus also making themselves a little bit more public. Now, we've still got like at least a good 10-minute segment still left of, for our local news segment. And we step into the particular development of the recently announced Mission 300 initiative that the Ministry of Energy announced, which is aimed to accelerate the access to electricity for at least 200,000 plus Namibian households by 2030. And this is as the ministry's own Abraham Hangula, the Deputy Director for Energy Planning, noted that this plan allows the country to look extensively at its infrastructure and local capacity to participate in the overall goals. Now, Angula added that generation, transmission, and other resources are measured in what can be added and modified under M300 and the local equipment, local equivalent for access to electricity and more. Let's have a listen to what he cited there.
Suppose being the idea that together we go further, and that's really the case here. And it looks at obviously primarily increasing access, yeah? And we talk a lot about that, but it is a framework that understands that you don't just stop with access. You need to increase generation as well. You need to increase those transmission lines that connect your loads with your generators. You need to have utilities that are viable, that are strong, that can eventually give you this service. And we really, really understand that government shouldn't go alone either. So you need the private sector, and we see how we can leverage private sector skills, technical ability, and funding. Yeah. So that's what this M300 is, and that's what we want to now join as a country in Namibia. This is the commitment from the World Bank and the African Development Bank. So the World Bank commits to try and connect 250 million people, Africans, by 2030, and is broken down as such. So we're going off-grid as well. It's not just connecting everybody to the grid. African Development Bank made a commitment to connect a further 50 million people. And that's the M300, connecting 300 million people by 2030, so Mission 300. Now, we're getting other partners involved. We're getting governments involved. We're getting all sorts of DFIs, agencies involved, and we have a couple of them here. So they will then, at some point, and governments, obviously, governments are highly, highly involved in this, the balance there of 270 million to then get to 570 million. Lots of numbers. I'll explain some of this later as we go. Now, we were introduced to this process or to this whole idea of joining M300 in February this year. There was a huge summit in Tanzania. It was called Heads of State Summit, Energy Summit, where literally up to about 30 heads of states attended. Now, you don't usually get such, and this was on energy. So unfortunately, our then president, His Excellency Nangolo Mbumba, was unable to join. So he sent the DPM at the time, Anogo John Mutova, to represent Namibia. And that's where we made the commitment that we also want to join. Now, at this summit, 12 countries had already joined, and they are called Cohort 1. So we are now joining as Cohort 2, an extra 17 countries.
Now, still on that particular presentation that Angola did, on the dimension of trend analysis, he noted that there are various zones across the world that are in need of the expansion of electricity coverage to areas in Asia, in parts of Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, who are the targeted areas under the M300. We have a listen to this trend analysis discussion.
This is a telling graph, this. So there are several regions in the world where the electrification rate was relatively high. In 2001, it was sub-Saharan Africa, represented by the green here, and Asia, Eastern Asia and Southern Asia. So Asia had roughly 600 million people unelectrified. Africa had just below 500. 10, 15 years later, Asia has done really, really well. They have less than 100 million people unconnected now. This is the only place in the world where our access rate or the number of people that are not connected has been increasing. There's work ongoing in Namibia. We're doing quite a lot, but that access rate just seems to be increasing. So obviously it can be, and I love the word that the president uses, can be business as usual. Yeah. And that's what M300 is. It's not, it can be business as usual, or otherwise that rate will be increasing. And I don't see why it won't be, because so that's the trend. It's been set. So we need to do something, hence this movement. And Africa needs to come together and get all the partnerships that we need. And the opportunities, which I don't get into, things are getting better. There's AI now, the technology is improving, it's getting cheaper with solar, etc., etc. And there are all these partnerships that are willing to help us. So I think this is ripe now for Africa to do this, and I think for that we must commend the World Bank and AFDB for coming up with something like this. So we want to then scale, you know, that's the word that we'll be using quite a lot. This mirrors Namibia, that trend that we had an access rate at a certain point and it's just been increasing. Now, before the census, the latest census of 2002, the latest data we had from NSA was that we had so many households, just over 500,000 households. And please note, this is households connected to the grid. Our figure was at 47.7%. So we constantly keep saying we're at 50%. So that's the figure of households connected to the grid. So split between urban and rural. So obviously there will be more houses in the urban connected, and this is the number that still need to be connected. So that means we had 284,000 households not connected. This was in 2015, 2016 when that last survey was done. Come 2022, the last census we had, okay, let me just jump to the figures that should jump at you. If we had 284,000 households not connected in 2022, it jumped to 401,000. Now again, please note, these are connected to the grid. And I understand there was a figure quoted already that we are at 59%, but people that are connected to the grid are roughly 47%. So now, you think that, yeah, of course, there's a decline there. That's what it is. So our figure from people that are not connected to the grid has declined, and we don't want to do that. So it's not just that we're not growing. We actually, you know, that figure is declining in terms of percentage. But what's more alarming is the absolute numbers. But that's because there's a natural growth, and much of what we are doing is really just servicing the natural growth. Yeah? And if we don't do that, push that initial, that you know, business unusual, again, the trend is set. There's no reason why this trend would reduce, and you know, all this talk then becomes absolutely nothing. Now, that number say a lot, yeah, and one can extract what you want to say, and being a numbers person, I don't want to get into that really. Let me extract the takeaway from those numbers for us. So, mentioned this already. So we are declining in terms of percentage, but what's again alarming is that the absolute numbers, that's what we want to look at. Yes, we can talk percentage, but let's focus on more Namibians, more households not being connected. And that's again something that we want to work on. Now, there are opportunities. There's solar now coming into the market, and we need to do a lot more on solar. Now, our figure is 59.5% if you look at the census, and that's because about 12%, 13% of the households are using solar now. And again, that technology developing, the reliability of that technology developing, that is something that we really, really must start putting more emphasis on. Of course, the ministry is doing quite a lot there. We have a solar revolving fund, and they helping push that agenda and increasing those numbers. I mentioned this already. We are primarily servicing the growth, the natural growth. At this current moment, if we keep doing what we are doing, that figure is going to stay at roughly 50%, the excess rate. Now, of course, solar is moving now, but it's also getting into a very tough space where we need more support to increase that number even some more. And this is what we are doing. On average, we are doing roughly 5,000, and that's a business as usual. So business unusual in our case would go to something like 35,000 per annum. So that's a massive jump. Eh? That's what this is means for us. And that's what NDP 6 says. That's what policy says. That's what M300 is coming into. And that's what they're trying to help us. Now, business as usual, again, is roughly 250 million that we are using. And if you want to get to those figures to actually really make a dent, we need to be at about 800 million per annum. So it's a lot. And I suppose the takeaway from this is that, yes, let's do grid, and the sector that we're working in is primarily grid people. Solar is really the game changer for us. As we are getting to what we in the sector call last miles, it's going to get even more expensive connecting those households. So if we want to reach those hard to reach households, solar needs to be an industry that must be getting the support and the growth, and that's what the M300 is helping us with as well. Alright, now let me quickly get into the compact, and the compact takes from our national goals. We have the policy, we have the NDP6, we have the NRP, so everything that you are seeing here is not something that we came up with. It's not new at all. It's in our national documents. So the compact has got certain targets, and it just then puts flesh on it. How do we do it? How do we finance it? So we want to increase the share of renewable energies, which stands at this figure, and let's not get into that. It can be argued either way, but it's roughly there. And we want to increase that to 70%. Our excess rate, as I indicated, is 59% now increasing, including solar. To get to 70%, it's the number in itself looks small, from 60 to 70. It's the absolute numbers, yeah? What that means for us is we want to connect roughly 200 to 210,000 households in the next 4 years. So hence, you can't do 5,000. You probably, as we are doing business as usual, that the NM figure will increase. So if it is 35 to 40,000 now, if we are not scaling that, next year we must do 50, we must do 60. So it starts now, and hence implementation now. Yeah. Clean cooking was mentioned. As we go into solar, we need to,
Now, getting back there, dear listeners, obviously that does bring us up to the end of the local news segment. We step into a short break. After the break, we'll come back heading into what will be the international news segment right after the break. On that note, dear listeners, stay tuned for the rest of your programming here on your number one talk radio station. This is the On the Radar, and we'll be back after this.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radar News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM. The Eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the Eye.
We come back, dear listeners, and stepping into the international news segment as promised, that we head into a scenario specifically of the ongoing, confusion, if you can call that, as the Rwanda and DRC situation once again places huge question marks in terms of the commitments that were made that saw heads of state obviously signing a particular agreement based upon us putting away the hatchets and thus moving on. Now, the latest particular development in this chapter or in this particular story or saga has seen that the U.S. United States has now stepped in terms of throwing accusations towards Rwanda for inflaming the conflict in the DRC as the fighting now is still intensifying. Now, fighting has intensified in the DRC's particularly eastern zone, and this is despite the U.S. brokered peace deal with Rwanda. The Rwandan-backed M23 rebels launched an offensive in January and first took control of the eastern city of Goma. They then moved south and took Bukavu, and in a fresh advance last week, they took the city of Uvira on the border with Burundi. Now, the conflict over the mineral-rich region has set off a humanitarian crisis that is still deepening. We have a listen to this report.
...in the Democratic Republic of Congo, despite a U.S.-led peace deal with Rwanda. Rwandan-backed M23 rebels launched an offensive in January and first took control of the eastern city of Goma. They then moved south and overran Bukavu. In a fresh advance last week, they took the city of Uvira on the border with Burundi. The conflict over the mineral-rich region has set off a humanitarian crisis that is only deepening.
A new life under rebel control. Days after the city of Uvira fell in eastern Congo, calm is returning. But people are worried and uncertain, the streets and markets emptier than usual.
We were told we can resume our business. Before, we weren't selling anything and we were hungry. I came to see if I could sell anything. I don't know why the others didn't come.
It's been just over a week since Rwandan-backed M23 rebels took control of Uvira. Dozens were killed in the fighting, and in just a few days, hundreds of thousands of people displaced. Uvira was the Congolese government's major stronghold in the South Kivu province. Its fall follows a string of major M23 captures across eastern Congo, near the borders with Burundi and Rwanda. The region is rich in minerals, so controlling it is key. But the M23 now says it will withdraw from Uvira after pressure from the United States. The US has been angered by the continuing violence and has criticized the rebels' backer, Rwanda.
So rather than a march towards peace, as we saw under President Trump's leadership in recent weeks, Rwanda is leading the region towards increased instability and war.
The situation in Uvira is somewhat embarrassing for Washington. It only recently brokered a supposed peace deal between the Congolese and Rwandan governments that aimed to end three decades of conflict and what the UN calls one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. But doubts remain about whether it can be so simple in a region where peace has been so elusive for so long.
Well, I'm joined now by Kambale Musavuli, an independent consultant at the Center for Research on the Congo, Kinshasa, joining me from Washington, D.C. It's good to have you with us. Let me ask you about the M23 rebels. They claim to have begun withdrawing from the city of Uvira Wednesday night. What are you hearing from there? I mean, what's the situation like for the people there?
It is true that people have seen movement of soldiers to be M23 and the supporters leaving the town. But this morning, what we're hearing that we still have M23 vehicles patrolling the city and a few remnants there. And it's also important to note that the information of their removal from them leaving the city comes from the M23 themselves. There is no strong verification mechanism to actually attest to their complete withdrawal from the city. We don't know how many enter the city, and we don't know how many are leaving now the city as well.
Yeah, well, what about the hundreds of people who have reportedly been displaced by the fighting? Do we know where they are going, and do we know if they'll be able to return?
The hope is for them to return home in a peaceful Congo. Some have crossed the border of Burundi. Now, Congo and Burundi shares one border. Others have moved a little bit down south toward Kolwezi. And this has been the challenge of the conflict in the Congo for the past 29 years. We have over 7 million Congolese who are internally displacing their own homes due to the instability and the conflict that is raging in the country. So that's why the prospect for peace is critical for Congo. And for us, we believe that peace can only happen if there is justice. And unfortunately, any peace deal being signed now has no accountability measure or any justice measure. So we are afraid or we worry that we'll have more displacement if there is no accountability for the rebels breaking ceasefire, not holding to what has been agreed to for peace and stability in DRC.
Yeah, you mentioned accountability. Who should be responsible for enforcing the peace agreement? Do you look to the U.S.? Do you look to regional leaders? I mean, who should be the police here?
Okay. The peace deal is an initiative by the United States. Unfortunately, I will have to look to the U.S. for that, but that's not actually what the Congolese people are hoping for the U.S. to be the police there. But they organize a peace signing agreement in Washington, D.C. And in that peace agreement, we knew that it's not going to hold because it's almost similar to past agreement. There is no accountability measure. For all intended purposes, when we're talking about the M23, we're actually talking about Rwandan Defense Force soldiers embedded with the M23. So we have foreign troops in DRC, and they're not held accountable. How can they be held accountable by the United States? There is a U.S. law, Public Law 109456, called the Democratic Republic of Congo Relief Security Democracy Promotion Act. It was signed into law in 2006. This law says in Section 105 that the Secretary of State has the power to withhold financial aid, taxpayers' money of Americans to any nation destabilizing the Congo. While we're hearing condemnations from Washington, we're not seeing them enforcing their own law. So we're not just calling for sanctions, right? We're actually calling for them enforcing a law that they themselves put into the books by holding their ally Rwanda accountable for supporting rebel groups, displacing thousands of people in the DRC. So if they can implement that law, that will go a long way. We know historically international pressure has worked on Rwanda to bring about peace and stability in the DRC.
All right, well, we will be watching to see if that indeed is the case this time around. Mr. Musavuli from the Center for Research on the Congo, Kinshasa in Washington.
Now, coming back still from that Central African discussion, we still stay in Central Africa, and this is still as the discussion around the actual country with the name Central African Republic is highlighting various particularly interesting discussions as, you know, for its upcoming particular elections. Now, the question is, you know, what potentially is at stake for the Central African Republic as it prepares for a quadruple vote? And this is as campaigning is underway in the CAR ahead of its elections in next at the end of this month, that is at the end of December. Voters will choose national, regional, and municipal lawmakers. But before we actually continue, dear listeners, we quickly take a short ad break and come back right after that.
If you lost your show, all of that you tungupo. Oma wa o tomono okutako NHP. Genge wa longifai longifoli lipedu lo wa wo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku nefiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oe. Owa washimali wa oshosha kupako. Washika wet gelwa kom to alandu. Akokashi. Koma punglo e na shano unjolo welewe. Otodulo okulongifa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko. Opo unamiti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oimali wa ishona. Oyo hodulo okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, oma yakulo olu hapu, hakala ina kwa telwa, mouwa we kwa folo elu unamiti, ile oto julu no kuli, okupitifapo emwe didonumba, tokala inofuta ea kulolo elu unamiti. Kowya lele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fwana otodi na okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Coming back, as promised, dear listeners, from the ad break right there. And where we left off, we're still looking at the, well, turn in developments at the end of this month specifically that could happen in the Central African Republic regarding their planned elections to take place for national, regional, and municipal lawmakers. Now, this potentially could lead to the country electing its next president, and the incumbent president, Faustin Archange Touadéra, is seeking a re-election in a 7-strong field. Now, this is after the modifications to the constitution has been made that would allow him to seek a third term. We have a listen specifically at this particular engagement.
The country's next president, the incumbent Faustin Archange Touadéra, is seeking re-election in a 7-strong field after modifying the constitution to allow him to seek a third term.
Clear jubilation on show in Bangui, a celebration of the launch of the electoral battle. Voting at levels in the Central African Republic. Municipal, regional, legislative, and the big prize of the presidency. The elections are a major challenge for the country, still plagued by instability.
I would ask you to take a look at the situation in 2016 when I took office. There was no state authority throughout the country. Here in Bangui, there were only internally displaced people around the airport, in mosques, in churches, in schools. What's the situation today, 10 years on? We see a country that is gradually recovering, that is raising its head. Because, you see, some time ago, the press was talking about the Central African Republic as a failed state, as a country on the brink of genocide.
But President Touadéra is up against opposition. Foremost among his opponents is Anicet Georges Dologele. Dologele had to give up his French passport as the Central African Constitution doesn't allow candidates with dual nationality to run for the office of the president.
Why did you relinquish your French nationality? Is it a thirst for power or what? If you lose these elections, would you regret having relinquished your French nationality?
No, because I am going to win these elections. I renounced my French nationality to run against the incumbent president. Do you see the difficulty? It means that I love my country. It means that I want to save my country. I'm giving up something that brings me nothing but advantages in order to face difficulties.
As the various candidates jockey for position, it is the people of the Central African Republic who have the final say when they cast their votes.
I already have my voter card, which I will use to vote for the person who will bring us peace.
It's our duty to take precautions to vote in order to have peace and democracy in our country and to prove to the world that we are ready to accept democracy. It's a civic duty for all Central Africans to participate in these elections.
Whoever wins this election, we no longer want the sound of gunfire. We just want peace and stability in our country.
As Central Africans are preparing to go to the polls on the 28th of December 2025 to vote for a new president who is going to handle the future of this country for the next 7 years, the country is still facing some few security challenges.
We've made progress from where we were to where we are today. However, there's still a long way to go. And that's what I'm calling for. I'm asking the Central African people to give me another opportunity to continue working with them, to continue serving them.
But with questions hanging over the outcome of the election, such as poverty, lack of opportunity, and insecurity, the opposition may yet be in with a chance.
And here on DW News Africa on YouTube, we have a special extended version of the interview.
Now, coming back, dear listeners, there from that particular engagement there between regarding the elections planned at the end of the month, and that's at the end of December, specifically in the Central African Republic. Other developments, obviously, in an economic sphere of things, sees us turn to our southern neighbor, South Africa specifically, who is aiming at increasing its international tourism market. Now, this obviously highlights a specifically interesting component, as South Africa is known as one of the global premium tourism destinations. And according to its Department of Tourism, which is its Ministry of Tourism, between January and September of 2025, more than 7 million international tourist arrivals were recorded Let's have a listen to this engagement.
According to the Department of Tourism, between January and September 2025, more than 7 million international tourist arrivals were recorded. This is an increase of over 1 million visitors compared with the same period in 2024, with strong growth particularly from key markets in Africa, Europe and Asia. Now, this festive season, domestic tourism is also expected to further increase with a total of 33 million day trips and 26 million overnight trips recorded in 2024 as more South Africans visit some of the tourist destinations that we have, which are absolutely magnificent in South Africa. But to talk more about South Africa's tourism this festive season, we are joined by Patricia de Lille. She, of course, is the minister in charge of tourism. Minister, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Good morning, Leanne, and good morning to your viewers. It's a really, really fantastic season for tourism this year. You sure know that the G20 has helped us a lot too.
Yeah.
And we've received many first-time visitors. But South Africa remains the most beautiful country in the world. And people coming from all over the world to visit us. And our domestic tourism has always been the bedrock of our tourism sector and remains that. And therefore, I would like to thank all the stakeholders, you know, all the partners in the sector, all the people that work in hotel and the guest houses all over the country, and to South Africans for being so welcoming, you know, the Ubuntu. We're always happy to receive our visitors.
Yeah, it's always an absolute pleasure. And I must tell you, I mean, just on a side note, I was out of the country just for a few days this week in Geneva, and everyone I spoke to, they just looked at me and said, "Oh, you're so lucky. It is the most beautiful country. We can't wait to go back and visit it." So that's just on a side note. The reputation is there, but obviously it needs, you know, a lot more work in terms of growing those numbers, which we've done by 1 million, Minister. 1 million more than the previous time this year. 7 million international tourists. Talk to us.
Definitely, Leanne, what we have to do, of course, going into the future is that we have to maintain those numbers.
Yeah.
We have to service some of our big source markets. The electronic travel authorization is going to be a big game changer going into the future, because now the big source markets like India and China, Indonesia, Mexico, those countries will no longer have, you know, any hassles with visa applications. We now just working very hard, and we started the processes to also increase the number of direct flights to South Africa. You know, we engage in many, many airlines to do that. And then, of course, you know, it all translates into economic growth, it translates into jobs for especially our young people. And therefore, we're very grateful that we have seen this growth, because definitely we are able, you know, to, as the Department of Tourism, you know, work together with other government departments, like we are working together with Home Affairs, you know, to assist with the tourist safety and security. We have made available 202 tourism monitors. Mm. They've been deployed to Owatambo. We have deployed some of them to the Border Management Authority. And it's that working together amongst government working with the private sector, and all the people that work in that sector, in this sector, that we can be proud of that we have achieved. What we have achieved now, it's projected to grow by 20%.
Wow.
But we have to keep the momentum, Leanne.
Very much so. I mean, that would be incredible. So obviously, I mentioned in the introduction where we saw the key markets. So obviously, on the continent, so a lot of Africa, then Europe,
the continent,
and Asia. I mean, perhaps you can talk a bit more about that. And most importantly, how do we grow other markets, make other countries also want to come and visit South Africa?
Well, you know, we do have competition also, Leanne, and that is why we also have to be more aggressive in our marketing. And so we have now put together a joint marketing committee between the Tourism Business Council and SA Tourism. And we've got a joint plan. We are funding the plan together, put all our resources together. It is the market that decides through the Tourism Growth Partnership plan that a cabinet has just approved. That plan comes from the private sector, the public sector. We all put it together. And it's now the implementation of that plan that is assisting us to work together. Government cannot do it alone. And the collaboration with our communities, you know, we have involved our communities every step of the way with the preparations for the G20. And I will be making sure that we continue to keep this working relationship, to continue to consult, continue to make sure that we work hard to get even more flights to our country. I think the opportunities are endless, Leanne. It's just for us now to implement them.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Yeah. Minister, in terms of the G20, we obviously saw this happening. The World Leaders Summit took place.
Yeah.
There were many sideline events, and this wasn't just the one event that everybody was privy to in terms of the Leaders Summit. This was across the country, different breakaway events that were happening.
Yes.
Perhaps you can talk to us about the impact that this actually had on South Africa and tourism.
Now, that actually brings us up to the end, dear listeners. Unfortunately, in terms of if you wish to listen to that particular last segment, well, unfortunately not. It does bring us up to the end of today's segment here on the radar, here on your number one talk radio station. Do stay tuned for the next program to come on right after we say our good particular goodbyes. Do remember, dear listeners, that you've got to stay safe, guys. You've got to adhere to the particular road rules wherever you find yourself during the course of your travels. If you are traveling for this festive season across the country, across the length and the breadth of the country, and remember to come back or arrive alive, specifically on that side, and to come back alive on this side if you're coming back to the capital. On that note, let's see each other again same time. Well, not same time, but rather on new times from Sunday. Well, on Sunday specifically, it'll be still at 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. on my Sunday morning take. In the new week to follow on, you'll catch me in a different time frame. But nonetheless, we'll still have the interesting discussions to follow on as we go through the holiday programming that'll be slated or is planned in the coming week. On that note, stay tuned and let's see each other again over the weekend.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radar News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the